Hey, it's Jeff here. After working as an automotive tech for almost 25 years, I can honestly say that finding employment with the right shop has been the difference maker between loving what I do every day or hating my career choice. Let me tell you, I've been there, but I've also had jobs where work didn't really feel like work. I love the challenge of fixing cars, so loving what I do, that's the easy part. Finding a good place to do it in, now that's been the struggle. And that's where my friends at ProMotive knock it out of the park. They're a recruitment company specializing in jobs for our automotive industry. A-techs, B-techs, master techs, service advisors, managers, you name it. They are constantly looking for applicants in automotive to link them with available job postings at only the best vested shops around the country. ProMotive has a team of professional recruiters that can help you with your resume, prep you for the interview process, and negotiate the best pay and benefits package for you. And best of all, it's free to anyone looking to gain employment. Check them out at gopromotive.com/Jeff. gopromotive.com/Jeff. Just think, you could be just 5 minutes away from finding your dream job.
Pride doesn't pay your light bill. I can fix anything, right? You drop it off, I'll fix it. Sometimes that doesn't pay the bill. You make more money if you're like Check Engine Chuck or Mobile Guy. You're going to make more money if you listen to Dutch. You've got to learn how to do that side of it. Yeah, it's just a cycle. We talk about it. It's always been a problem. AST is coming up, right? Top 2 to 5% of the techs and the teachers all be there, right? But what the hell is the bottom 50% talking about? What the hell is the other 80% talking about? What are they doing, right? Will we ever reach those guys? Lucas says yes. I begged it different times. I know some of these 80%, right? They're great guys, but they're horrible techs. They're horrible owners.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another exciting, thought-provoking episode of the Jaded Mechanic Podcast. My name's Jeff, and I'd like to thank you for joining me on this journey of reflection and insight into the toils and triumphs of a career in automotive repair. After more than 20 years of skin, knuckles, and tool debt, I want to share my perspectives and hear other people's thoughts about our industry. So pour yourself a strong coffee or grab a cold Canadian beer and get ready for some great conversation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Jaded Mechanic Podcast. I've got one of our OG guests back with us tonight. I got Justin Porter. Justin Porter and I were just spent probably the last 30 minutes talking about fishing. And
45, whatever.
Yeah. We didn't want to bore you with all that talk, so we finally said, well, let's get down to the subject matter. So here we are. Justin, how are you, man?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm a lot better. We kind of talked off air about my new development, and I'll release that pretty quick. But I'm excited. Well, what we talked about, right? It's a family run kind of shop, and that's I guess why I wanted to talk to you a bit, because that's you work with your stepdad, like we talked about in our first episode,
yes.
You and I recorded. I guess what I've always wanted to know from the standpoint of what is it like when it's the father-son dynamic working together? Because sometimes I've been the outsider in a shop like that, and I see it being one way, but I just, what do you think?
First question, how old is the son? Because I think that matters.
I'm going to put him at about mid-20s. Early 20s.
See, when I was mid 20s, I was pretty hard-headed, extremely mouthy, and what I thought was really good at my job,
right?
And probably wasn't anywhere close to what I thought I was. My stepdad, we had some not so great conversations at times in the shot, but it was never, yeah, a lot of times it was at work. But it's a lot, right? I mean, you work with a guy 8-10 hours a day.
Yeah.
And I didn't live at home at that point. Not by much. Probably moved out in a year or so.
Yeah.
It's interesting, right? Because you have two different relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You have work and you have home, right? And humans struggle separating that, like I know I did, or do still. At times, it's the greatest and worst thing all wrapped up into one at times.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in my mid-20s, I'm not sure too many shops would have put up with my attitude. I showed up to work. I worked what I was supposed to do. I threw things. I cussed.
You were a mechanic. Yeah.
That's right. I mean, I grew up in the shop too, right? My mom married him whenever I was 8.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been, what the kids call it today, bullied by the gearheads that hung out in the shop. You know, they, whatever, made me very quick-witted and a smart-ass is what they done.
Yeah, they send you looking for the left-handed screwdrivers, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I used to, we would poke holes in the Freon tanks to throw them in the dumpster. Don't know if we had to. I used to use a chisel and a hammer. So they threw firecrackers at me because I thought I was scared of it, right? I didn't know any better.
Yeah, that won't cause PTSD at all. No.
I can tell you now that I don't jump. Like, people like try to get me to jump. I just turn and look at them. You can't do anything to me at this point in my life that hasn't been done to me in a shop, right?
Yeah.
And some of that, I mean, and that's a whole other conversation. Maybe that's why some of our techs don't stick around in this industry at times. You know, but I also think some of these new kids are soft.
Mm-hmm. My experience when I was starting in, so way, way, way back in my career, I worked in a truck shop. And when I got hired, it was the father, his nephew. So his nephew probably would have been late 20s, because I was just a young kid. Like, it was like I was 19, so I would have put him at maybe, yeah, so mid-20s. And then his son, who was 18 and still living at home. And then his mom worked in the office with his dad. His dad was still one of the best mechanics I've ever worked with. Super smart. Predominantly a truck shop, 18-wheelers, trailers, stuff like that. Well, what really I saw from working there was that we all got in shit because his dad was not an easy guy to work for. He wanted things done a certain way. He said, you know, he would outwork any of us. He wasn't kidding. And he was just a small little wiry guy, but he, like, you know, he didn't mess with him. He was something to be respected. He wasn't a bully. He just was blunt, straight to the point. You know, he didn't worry if you got your feelings hurt a little bit. He was going to say it so you understood what he was trying to say, and that was it. There was no room for niceties. What we found was we all got in shit, but his son, I think, it always seemed like his son got in more shit. Away. You know what I mean? Like, if the son did something wrong, I'm sure he got in shit, but he didn't get in shit in front of us too often. You know what I mean?
See, I'm the other way. Like, I coach baseball, right? We just discussed that in the first one. I coach my boy, and me and him have had this conversation because I tell him I can't be dad on the baseball diamond at times. Like, right? We got to kind of have this deal. And we always get in the truck afterwards and he's like, hey, why did you hit me ground balls harder than everybody else? Why did you make me do this? Well, I said, because I'm not going to show favoritism. You have to be better than everybody. I kind of felt that in the shop.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I had to be better than everybody else. I didn't want to be the guy that was the son that just rode the coattail or whatever, right? I didn't want to be that guy. I don't know when I figured that out. I'm not sure. 20s, 30s, 40s. I don't know. I really don't know when that really truly hit me. But I've always semi-wanted. I had a baseball coach tell me. I blew my knee out my senior year playing basketball. But one of my baseball coaches told me if I'd have been in the weight room, that wouldn't have happened. Because I had skipped. I had skipped baseball weights because I was lazy. You know, and that stuck with me. Like, he sort of was right. It was, it wasn't about me not coming to weights. It was, you're not putting the work in that this deserves. So you semi got what you deserved. It's kind of what, I mean, that was kind of how I took it. But that stuck with me. You kind of get out of it what you put in it.
Yeah. I found with that is that towards the end of my tenure with him at that shop, it just became more and more frustrating because so you'd work afternoon shift, right? And you'd be there, just be him and I, and you'd be there and you'd start at like 2 p.m, you'd work till 10 and you'd close up and whatever you got done, you got done. Whatever didn't get done, you started at 2 the next day and you were expected to be there about 1:30 to clock in, and he would probably give you shit for the half an hour that you were there before you were on the clock about what didn't get done. He'd give you the rundown on what had to get done that night. And I can remember like getting in so much shit, and his son wasn't even there yet, about the stuff that hadn't been done. And when I worked there, his son was older than, more experienced than me, and knew what was going on. He was, had the experience and whatnot. So I would be there getting in shit, and I'm like, I just did whatever I was told to do, man. Like, so that was always the dynamic that I was just like, well, this fucking sucks. This proverbial golden child is not getting in any shit, and I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing according to him, but I'm now getting my ass chewed. What I probably realized later on is that probably when he went home that night, his dad was probably still waiting up for him. His dad probably had a few glasses of scotch. And then probably before he could go to bed, was asked, what did he get done at the shop? What did he not get done? What kind of problems did he run into? And then he probably got his ass chewed before he went to bed.
So do you think the son took burden of the shop home with him?
Well, so, yeah. So here's the story. The rest of it, the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey used to say. The son had only ever worked at that shop. He'd come up through, he got his license, he learned at his dad's knee, just similar to your situation. They went and bought a second shop, and he went and ran that shop.
How'd he do?
It did so much to their, apparently, now I've kind of lost touch with the family, but this is as you bump into people and they tell you what, you know, how's this person, that person. It got to be so bad, I guess, with how he was running that shop that never satisfied his father, that one day he just walked away from that other business. He left the keys in the door and he called his dad and said, I'm done. This is killing me. This is killing us. I guess they patched it up now, and I'm not sure if he's back working with his dad or, but it was, it for a long time there, I guess they didn't have a relationship, the father and the son. And that's, I understand, right.
We've never been there.
Yeah. The father was just trying to set him up for success. He's just trying to build something and leave it to him. But from what I understand, man, it was bad, really bad. So, but I always looked at it as like, because again, so he had his nephew who was older than both of us and his son. And his nephew was, he liked to gamble and he liked to drink. He didn't do well on Mondays. He almost never worked.
Don't pay him early on a Friday because he won't come back from lunch.
Don't pay him on Thursday night.
Yeah. Because
he'll be there Friday. And so he would gamble all weekend. So he would drive an hour from where I live to up towards Ottawa. And there was, before there was a casino, there was a racetrack for horses. And they had slot machines. And he'd sit there and just pull the slots for hours. If he won some money, he'd go to a store up here, what they call Princess Auto, which Princess Auto is like Harbor Freight, but not as good a quality. And he'd come back with a bunch of tools because he was forever having to work out of his uncle's toolbox. And it drove his uncle nuts because he wouldn't buy tools. He'd lose half of his uncle's tools. And then it was like, okay, well, you lost that screwdriver of mine. You're going to have to replace the screwdrivers. Well, he'd come back. He would have lost his uncle's like Snap-on screwdriver. He'd come back with some $10 set of screwdrivers that you used it once, and I mean, we're using a screwdriver as a pry bar, right? Let's be real. We all do it.
Right.
It looked like a swizzle stick when it was done. Like it was, and it would drive him nuts. And so finally it got so bad, he fired his nephew. But I mean, I saw his nephew and his son get way more chances than I ever got to screw up, you know?
See, that's, yeah. But I think that's common in the whole family thing, right?
Yeah.
And that's one thing I never really wanted. I never wanted the guys that worked here to think I was getting everything handed to me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I did when I was younger. I don't know. I was young and dumb, and it was 23 years ago. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think so, but maybe.
I mean, I don't say that they didn't work for it, but they just had so many extra chances. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, okay, right. You could screw that up, and your safety net, you know, is going to be there. Now, he still fired his nephew. He still had to fire him. It was just like, and...
But you got to do what's best for everybody else there, too.
And the nephew did go on and get another job somewhere else. And I don't know what their relationship is since. I haven't seen him in, 10 years.
See, I'll just text my mom and tell her that she needs to fix whatever the problem is.
Yeah. It couldn't have been easy, I guess. But I just looked at it, and Brian and I were talking the other day, and I said, it's just because, I mean, it's almost like it seems like some of them just have a safety net. If you just stay above that line of don't screw up to this level, you're going to ride this eventually, and it's going to be yours.
Right.
Family doesn't always get fired, is what I've seen. Now, I know there's exceptions to that, but.
So I do work for a local car sales place. And they have a little bit of that. They have some grumble at the bottom side of, hey, the boys don't do this. They don't do that. They're lazy. I don't know if it's outside perspective or if it's really true. I'm not there enough to know.
Yeah.
I think sometimes as the prince of the auto repair shop or whatever, you know, the next in line, whatever you want to call him, I think they're held to a higher standard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not against it. Yeah. I don't think I would. I don't think I would be as good a tech without that attitude of, hey, I got to be better than this. Yeah. Right. I mean, but I've always had that attitude of wanting to be number one, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like getting beat.
Yeah. You got a competitive spirit.
But it's tough. So my stepdad obviously has the last name different than mine, right? So there was a lot of people that didn't even know. Like, they just didn't know that he was my stepdad. There's, you know, we would go to the racetrack and my mom would yell at somebody. And they'd be like, lady, what do you even have to do with that? She's like, well, that's my son.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, you have a different last name. And she goes, that still can be my son. So I never was really associated with them, I guess, at times.
Right.
And at the shop, some people knew. I mean, we're a small town, right? I mean, we got two stoplights at Dairy Queen. So most people know.
Yeah.
But there was times where people didn't. I've had some people think he was my real dad, which I got no problem with. I don't argue that. I tell them, I know. I don't act any different.
Yeah.
But there is a story of me hanging off the side of a race car hauler screaming at them as they were leaving to go to the racetrack one day. I don't remember what it was even over. I just remember hanging on the side of the truck, giving them my opinion or whatever it was.
Well, why were
I have a little bit you, of
a, you weren't going to go the ahead. Race? You weren't
no,
going to
I
the
was
race?
Staying at working. I didn't race on Friday nights. They would race on Friday afternoons, and I just wasn't my thing. I was probably mad because they were leaving and I had shit to do.
Mm-hmm.
Probably being that brat of, you guys get to leave, but I got to stay here and work.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have a, I mean, I think I spoke in the first podcast, I get to buy what I want here for the most part. I bought some cloning tools for PCMs here in the last couple weeks. I'm not even sure that Dutch would probably yell at me. I'm not sure the return investment's there right now. So I don't. Well, it was more of an addiction buy, and it's get my ass out of trouble is what it is, right? It's one of them tools that sometimes you just need to make something work.
Well, Brian was talking the other day. I think he used ECM for a Dodge the other day, and I don't know if he went in and like found it, right, or whether he just cloned it. I can't remember what he did. You can ask him. He'll tell you. He probably already has told you. And he said that it was like, he bought the unit for like $100. It took him an hour or 2 hours or whatever, and he made it was to the shop, charged him like $700. Right. And that module to buy it if they could get it, which I guess is like intergalactic back order, nobody can tell them when.
Was it a diesel PCM?
I'm not sure. It was like it was gonna be $1,100 anyway. So he did the job for half.
Right.
Gets the car turned around for the customer at the dealership. And so what you're saying about, well, you're not Dutch would be, I don't know, because I mean, the way it's going, I think that this is going to be.
Oh, I think it's coming more and more.
I think it's going to be more lucrative than ADOS. I really do. You know,
I got an ADOS job in the morning.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's the first thing I got to do.
Yeah,
so we'll see it. A typical body shop. It showed up. They just told me it had a windshield put in it. That's all they told me. Mm-hmm. And I scan it, and it has a failed alignment for the radar.
Okay.
And I called them like, hey, what the heck have you guys done to this? Oh, we had the bumper off of it and all kinds of stuff. And they didn't tell me. They just told me it had a windshield put in it. So, speaking of giving Scuddy shit, I had to call him and just say, hey, this is my game plan with this. And he said, I don't even know why you called me, because it sounds like you've already figured it out. I hope he's having fun cutting his boards or whatever the hell he's doing.
I'm happy. I mean, it sucks that, you know, that state's getting another blast of weather, right? But, I mean, I'm happy that he's doing his kitchen. It looks pretty good. He's such
a... Who'd have ever thought he was good at stuff like that?
I mean, you've seen that artwork he's done with the saw and the... And that kind of stuff. I mean, it's his. Is it his father or his stepfather that was the building inspector that he was telling us all about?
Oh, shoot. I don't know. His own Sometimes I zone him out because I can't. He just rambles on.
And his own brother, right? Is
Yeah, he's running a truck for him.
But he'd done that kind of work before he came to
for Scuddy. Yeah, that's why he had talked about ADOS, because he was good with measuring and angles and all that good stuff.
So I'm happy, honestly, to see him starting to get, you know, expanding and because I think he's done such a.
I just try not to let too many people know I know him.
Right, because they immediately just they assume they assume you're one way. Did you read the app and service information? You know.
Yeah. Did you read SI? Hell no. I don't even know what SI is, Matt. Can you service information? Oh, shit. No, but I will. When I called him today on this Hyundai, I really just wanted. I was looking for field advice. I'm sure he had seen this, right? So I had just called to kind of make sure I was looking at the right way. And so I had service information pulled up on my computer, and I read it to him line for line, and said, "I read this is what service information says." And then I told him my plan, and he goes, "I don't even know why you called me. You already got it figured out."
I think Dutch 20 years ago would have been Matthew.
Oh, I think so. I think so. It just wasn't the technology to get him out there whenever he was that way.
But I think they would have been very similar approach to it, right? Like they just would have been very cut and dried to the point, you know?
Yeah, but I'm okay with that. I'm that way too.
Yeah, I'm not bothered by it. I mean, it's kind of – people have known me a while have known how I tend to talk and how I tend to conduct myself, and you know it's been good. Some people I think are starting to come around. They're understanding that it's just the way I talk. It doesn't, you know, I'm not a bad person. I mean, it's just the way I talk. It's if they had to work with some of the people I work with, you know, they might understand, because it's just, you know.
How much of it's a generation gap?
Well, I mean, I'm,
we talked, right? Like, we just had that conversation, how I grew up in a shop. So that's why I asked how old, you know, you asked about the son and how old. I mean, a 20-year-old in a shop right now could be interesting if he's, depending, it's all depending on how he was raised, though, right? I mean.
Yeah. I mean, I'm excited. I got a good vibe off of it. It didn't seem, you know, how, because sometimes you might think, oh, well, the owner, the son, you know, might have this big shiny toolbox and no tools in it, or, and I didn't see any of that going on. You know, I didn't see, like.
So I have that big shiny toolbox, but Zach, that does our front ends and drivetrain, he's good tech. He uses out of it more than I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I have a crash cart. I call it my crash cart. It's got my power probe, my quarter inch sockets, and wire strippers.
Yeah.
So I told him when he started, just here, dude, this, if it's in here, you can use it.
Yeah. Yeah. They had a pretty good, they've got the, whatever that number is for the Autel, the big Autel
score. Like the Ultra or the 919?
Yeah. I think it's a 919 to the Ultra, one of those two, with the scope and the, you know, the whole big thing, which I've never used one. We'd got one demoed. So I'm excited to have that to try. And then he's got a Zeus Plus, which I have my own Zeus. So, I mean, that's kind of, will be familiar, but it'll be nice to get the.
So does the boy turn wrenches in this shop?
Yep. When I was leaving tonight, he was doing a rear wheel bearing on a little Hyundai Accent, probably a 20, what it, maybe a 16 Accent. The customer was actually coming through, and she was driving down the highway. So she was about 45 minutes out, and it was after 5, because they work 4 days a week, 7 to 7. So she, I guess she found on Google that there was still a shop open. So they called, she called before 5, and they said, can you get it in? He said, let me check and see. So they pulled the car in real quick. She was going to sleep in the car otherwise, the overnight.
Wow.
For them to fix it tomorrow morning or whatever. And they found a wheel bearing, got the wheel bearing sent over, and he was changing that as I was leaving at like 6:20 tonight. And that's just a bang in, like it's just a bolt-in wheel bearing in the back, you know, 0.8 liter to change it. So he seemed to be doing
in Canada, no wheel bearing is just a bang in, bang out, is it?
Well, this one, thank God, driven it for so long, so it was literally like the hub fell.
It already had the heat applied.
Yes, and then it was just a situation of like he got the four bolts. Of course, are starting to round pretty good on the inside. He got the four bolts out of the thing, and then it was just some smacks with a hammer, and it came out right. So, but
Dad do in this shop? Does he run the office?
So Dad kind of handles the diag in the shop and some of the office, you know, customers come in and, you know, a quick check to see if it's, can they drive it or can they leave it? You know, what is that kind of thing? He does that kind of stuff. And then, I mean, they're down a tech already because there's a guy here with a broken foot, and then they're starting to ramp up and expand. So they needed another guy. So that's how the opportunity.
So are you going to have to do tires at this shop? Because that sounds awful up there.
Well, he's got one of the brand new Hunters.
The one that does it itself?
The one down from that one. So you still have to do it, but it's, and I've never used this machine, but I'm pretty sure I think that it comes with a, so that's not the one. Because the one that does it for itself, on the screen of the machine, you can play a demo mode. And it'll show you how to set the machine and walk away from it. This one, I don't believe, had a screen on it, but it's still very forward thinking. So, and I told him flat out, I said, I'll do my best to learn that machine. They've kept their old Coates machine. That's just a traditional machine over in the corner. And I said, but you know, if I feel like I'm falling behind getting this done, I'll just go over and use that machine. He's like, that's fine. So they got a brand new Hunter Road Force balancer, which I really like because I first used a Road Force like 10 years ago at the dealership. And then you start to go to some of these other shops and they don't have a Road Force. And you realize how much better a job the Road Force does.
That's what I've heard. We don't have one, but I try not to sell tires. I got too much other stuff to do.
This is it. But I mean, up here, we've talked about it. It's such a seasonal moneymaker, right? That you kind of, the industry kind of pushes it that way. Like you get a lot of your customers now, we've got them trained. You need a set of winter tires and you need to come in twice a year and get them swapped over. And, you know, you got TPMS. So, I mean,
just go south until that shit stopped.
Yeah. I don't like tire work, and you know, because it's heavy and it's like backbreaking and it's dirty and the margins suck in terms of the labor. But I mean, it, you know, you're there to get the brake job that it needs at the same time.
So do you flat rate tires? I've not been a flat rate guy, and I know you guys do a lot of tires. Is that a flat rate thing?
So what drove me nuts was when I was at the dealer, most of the dealers were still doing four tires for 1.2 in like 2006, which was a reasonably good time. 1.2, because we didn't have a ton of TPMS yet.
Right. So you could slam and bang and go.
If you did have a TPMS, the first gen Chryslers, you could literally set them by turning the key on and walking around the wheel with a speaker magnet. That was it. Like it was fast. It was easy. And then what happened is I'd started to go to other shops after I left there and they were still doing them for only an hour. And I'm like, okay, well that's even, you know, like 0.2 sounds like not much, but 0.2 times if you do 10 in that day, which it wasn't uncommon for us to do 10 tire jobs in a day. If that's for that 3 week mad rush, that's a substantial amount of money at the end of the week, the difference of 0.2. But then they're still doing them out for an hour, and then they're still doing them. Now you've got TPMS. So, like, it has to be retrained. You know,
yeah, and some of these TPMS, hell, it's a 15-minute job.
Yep. And where I always got pissed right off was because the car would come in, and the TPMS light's already on. But the customer tire swap, right? Like they're there for their tire swap. The TPMS is already on. So you might go around and who checks the tire pressure before you pull the wheel off if you're going to be changing the tire anyway? Well, not many flat rate techs do. Why would you?
You're changing on time for that.
Right? So then you put the thing back on. You go to do your retrain. You got a dead sensor. Well, did you kill the sensor when you did the tire? You greasy, you know, Russian, right, like hack of a flat rate mechanic. No, I didn't kill the sensor. It was probably already dead before we got to it. Well, the customer says the light wasn't on before. Wait a minute. Hold up. The customer says the light wasn't on before. I wrote it right here on my work order that the tire pressure light was already on before I started. Well, yeah, but they thought the sensor was working. Their other guy told them the sensor was working. It was just down in pressure. So who buys the sensor at that point? Who's doing the programming? Who's done the? You've already spent how many minutes trying to relearn the thing? It won't relearn.
See, right? At that point, you just put four in a piece of PVC pipe, air it up to what it needs to be, and throw it in a glove box. They won't ever have that problem again.
The very first systems I remember reading about it in the trade magazine back in 2003, they took a little implement tire, like a tractor tire, off a wheelbarrow or something.
Put them all in there and threw them in the trunk.
And the light shut off in the car.
That's.
I'm not against TPMS. Like, I'm not. I think it's a great.
It saved me a tire in the service truck one day. I got off the side of the road, and if it wasn't for that, I would have just ate it up.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a good thing.
What drove me crazy was shops not charging for it properly. And then our government up here, if you went and sold the customer winter tires and winter tire rims, You tried to sell them. So this is early on before the aftermarket really stepped up with aftermarket sensors, right? So you were probably sending them to the dealership. Even if you bought the sensors from the dealer, you might not have had the programming ability. So even if you bought the sensors, you're trying to do the right job. You're sending the customer to the dealer to get their new sensors programmed. Well, that's not like the customer, of course, when you get there, is going to be like, gee, Mrs. Smith, we have tire promos too. What did you pay for these? Oh, they put that brand on? Oh, we wouldn't have put that brand on, Mrs. Smith. We would have had, you know, we'd have put a premium tire on for not much more money. And Mrs. Smith, you wouldn't even need to, you wouldn't be going to two places to get, you know, blah, blah, blah. We have to program your tires is what it works. So, you know, for the longest time, when the tire thing hit big here and TPMS was starting in its infancy, the Canadian government said, well, you don't have to put a sensor in it. And we're like, what do you mean you don't have to put a sensor in it? Well, it's legal? Yeah, well, the light's going to be on. Yeah. Well, didn't we disable the safety systems in the car? Nope. If the light's on, that's telling the customer they need to check their tire pressure. And I'm like, you got to be freaking awesome. Kidding me. Right? Just you wouldn't believe the amount of people that bought a used car or a new car, got tire pressure sensors, or got a winter tire package. The salesman puts it together at the quoted price, no sensor. They leave, the light's on. What's that light about? Oh, well, it just means, you know, you've got your winter tires on, there's no sensors in there. Well, I didn't want that. I wanted sensors. Well, how much is sensors going to cost? $300. Oh, I'm not paying $300 more. You gotta be kidding. So, I mean, I like the system, but I hated how it was implemented up here. And that's so people get mad at me because sometimes I'll say when I say like ADOS is just is one more thing that the customer's not going to fix. And they go,
I was thinking about that today. Yeah.
They're going to fix it. Why? How many times have we seen an old Chevy come in and the impact sensors are rotted right off the front bumper and they're driving around and they know what's wrong with it and they don't want to fix it? Paul Danner put a video up. Right, Paul's own truck he drove around had an airbag light on for 2 years because of a corroded fuse. Like, just because it's there doesn't mean everybody's going to fix it. And that's why when I look at something as inexpensive now as a tire pressure sensor, and half of my customers or a lot of, and I'll say half the customers maybe in the industry, don't see the value in buying one, I don't see how ADAS is going to be something that suddenly all the customers are just going to be like, oh, I'm definitely going to fix that. I want that to work. It's important.
We'll know in another couple, 3 or 4 years how that's going to go.
Yeah. Like for me, I guess if I couldn't have cruise control without getting it calibrated, I'd probably, because I like cruise because it keeps me from getting speeding tickets.
Well, and then you got, they'll start taking away remote start and stuff like that. So people will be highly, like, I fixed a lot of check engine lights that I never thought people would fix because they need that remote start. Yeah. I've hung a lot of converters because people wanted the remote start to work.
Ain't that something, eh? Yes.
They're like, I can't do without my remote start. It's $1,200. Just fix it.
I've had people
spend $600-$700 on heated seats.
Yeah, well, I mean, I remember
I put a new one in my wife's car because it wasn't working.
We had when I was at Nissan, the Pathfinders for their climate controlled seats, not just the heated, but the heated and cooled ones. They were having an issue where the seat covers were failing, and they would burn up the contact, and you had to replace the whole cover, and it was all updated harness, updated cooling fan, updated. It was the last one I think I priced out was like $1,500, and it wasn't a replacement seat. It was like two covers, and the cooling fans and the heating elements and the harness updated because again, wires too small, draw too much current. And everybody looked at me because it always made it out of warranty. And then they looked at me like, and it's like, how much? $1,700. Oh, I'm not fixing that. I don't blame you.
I wouldn't fix it either. Well, how am I going to live without my heated seats? My old Cherokee, my 96 Cherokee that I sent to the scrapyard, I went to Canadian Tire up here and I bought one of them, those seat covers that plug into your cigarette lighter. That had the best heated seat of anything I've ever sat in my life. And it was $20. And people, and that's what I told customers. That's how I fixed it. Like, if you want to spend $1,700, cool. I'm just, you know, they just traded it. That's what they do. I mean, it is a nice feature. I admit my mom has it in her car. It's a nice feature.
Yeah, I like the air conditioning seats. My truck has it.
Yeah, I don't.
So this shop, does mom work in this shop?
Yes. So mom works in the shop. The daughter works on the counter with mom as well.
Holy cow, see, that's twice as bad. I don't have that here.
They seem to be all good. Like, she's pretty new to the whole thing. So, like, what he explained to me is that, like, bring them out. Like, do your digital vehicle inspection. Then bring them out and show them the part on the car that's, you know, the ball joint's loose or the wheel bearing's loose. Show it. Because that way they learn, because that's how. And then if the customer, they've got no objections to bringing the customer out and showing them, right? So, I mean,
right.
Yeah, I'm cool with that. I mean, I'm not worried. It feels like a good fit for me. So, I mean, I'm kind of excited. The money is substantially better. Substantially better. Like we
That's good.
Yeah. So what I take from this, and again, I was, so here's the thing. We can kind of go on a tangent on this. I have a young friend. She's a female tech. She just started at a Chrysler dealer last month. And she was talking, she's, I don't know if she's hourly with some kind of bonus on production or not. But she was telling me she's like, she's only made like 4 hours a day for the last 2 weeks. And I said, well, you know, it's kind of a slow time, I guess, maybe, you know, hard to say.
What kind of work is she getting?
Well, so one day she had a, I don't know if it was an SRT8 or if it was just a Hemi, but somebody ordered a fuel rail for it. So she got to put the fuel rail in. Once in a while, I guess she's done like an oil cooler and one of the 3.6s. I mean, what 3.6 doesn't have a leaky oil cooler? Mine doesn't.
Yeah, right. All of them.
Yeah, but mine, not, listen, don't go jinxing me because mine's not leaking yet. So I don't know what she's getting to do, but she says to me, she says, well, like, we're only getting, I'm only really getting a lot of oil changes. I'm like, well, you can make money on oil changes. It's like, no, it only pays like 0.15. And I mean, what do you mean it only pays 0.15? I said, it pays you 0.15. I said, I've never seen that in my life. Like I said, we used to get 0.3 or 0.4, but 0.15, I said, that's like 15 minutes. That's kind of like, how do they do that? She's like, no, it's not 15 minutes. I'm like, what is it? 9 minutes. 9 minutes for an oil change.
Hell, it takes me that long to drink my coffee before I get going.
I don't know. I understand when we have these conversations, and sometimes people listening to this go, oh, well, that's a dealership. Okay. We keep having to go back to, what are some of the business practices that are being coached in the independent section now, sector?
The same thing. We don't have a coach. We have a basketball coach here. Does that count?
But you know what I mean, Justin, like the business coaching, right, that some are teaching, is they're just teaching old dealership tactics that I saw used 10 years ago. But 0.9,
we're going to starve this girl out of the industry is what we're going to do. She's going to go do something else and make better money.
And see, she's in Virginia. She's got her Virginia State Inspector's License, which...
Well, she...
So
she could be a coal miner in Virginia and make $120 a year, probably.
Maybe. But you're right. We're going to starve her out of this industry. And then my good friend.
Starve her out.
Yeah.
And then she's going to be pissed off, and she's going to tell everybody she knows her age, don't go do this because it's stupid, awful, and we don't do a good job, which we've all talked about that, which I don't know what Brian's trying to do on the Facebook, but he's trying to piss off everybody that's on Facebook the last 2 days. But
so I can tell you the story on that. There was a tech that in the shop that has some issues, and he was given a job and whatever. He didn't like the job, and he just left at noon. Comes in the next day, and I guess he thought he could leave at noon and somebody would finish the job for him. The job was some cooler lines on a Ford truck, and he could come in the next day
on him when he come back.
No, I think Brian finished the job, but he came in the next. Stuff's got to get done, right? You got to promise time. It's got to be upheld. So he comes in the next day, and I guess I don't know how it's dispatched there, but he goes to work. Well, something got said, and there was quite an argument between the owner and this tech, and the tech was fired, rightfully so. So that's what brought that on with Brian. And then, of course, Brian, because he's going to be neutral, he then says, today.
Right. And I knew what he was doing today.
Yeah. And I'm just like, I'm not even going to read that because I'm sure it's going to blow right up. And it probably has 400 and some comments on it by now, and I haven't got through the first 10 of them. And I'm just
two
like,
of them are mine. So I commented twice.
You're right, though. We haven't done a good job. And this is my second story is another good friend of mine, Taylor. Taylor left a tire store that he'd been at a month ago because it was a really toxic place to work. And he saw a job posting for the local Chevrolet dealer, and he took it. Now, Taylor has his license like us Canadians need. And he goes into the dealership, and they're like, we need a license tech. So they hire him. And they say, we pay you $38 an hour, flat rate. He's like, man, that's great. I was only getting, 35 at the tire store straight time. They're like, 38 hour flat rate. Cool. So he goes to work, and then he starts the next day, and they tell him, oh, it's not 38 for every flat rate hour. If you're doing service work, so not a designated repair, so if you're doing tires, brakes, flushes, oil changes, inspections, it's not 38, it's 28. And he's like, okay. Well, but see, if you're under warranty and you're still doing like a repair, like the first week he was there, they had him do a complete frame for a collision job in a Silverado. I think he probably got 38 per hour for that. That's not service work. That's a repair job. But then like today, he texted me like 11 o'clock this morning. He was 11. He'd been there since 8. He hadn't got a job yet. So he's sitting there
with no work.
With no work. So
I don't understand the whole no work thing. Like I don't think I've ever come to work and not had any work.
I have been in a dealer lots of times. And even, to say that it's not just a dealer, that's not true. The tire store that I worked at here, there was lots of days where I went home at noon in the months of January and February.
So do they just have too many employees and not enough work? I mean,
yeah,
they don't want anybody to wait too long. So they just have more employees than work most of the time.
That's the business model. And that's what's being, taught in some of these groups.
See, we have the other problem. We have too much work, not enough help.
Yeah. But see, they think like, nobody should have to. And so right now, if you call, for instance, like if you call Subaru in Kingston here and you want to make an appointment, so call it for all intents and purposes, it's the 1st of September. If you call Subaru now, you're not going to get in the month of September. It's going to be midway through October before they can fit you in. It doesn't matter what you're coming in for. Doesn't matter if it's an oil change. Doesn't matter if you're an airbag is, it doesn't matter if the wheel's going to fall off because of a bearing and it's under warranty, you're not getting in. They're that.
So is it because they have that much work or not enough techs?
They've been running an ad trying to get a tech for the last 2 months. So that's, the shortage is definitely real. Now, I don't know. It's been a long time since I've been inside that dealership. It's not a particularly big dealer. I think they're starting to sell more Subarus than they used to. So it's adding to the backlog. But the shortage is affecting this. And what I can't understand is, when there's such a shortage, why is there so many people still waiting so long to fill the job? Right. And you go, well, that doesn't, well, there's a shortage. That's why they can't fill the job. There's techs working. I was one of those techs working in a place that if somebody had to come to me and said, do you want to make $42 an hour for an 8-hour shift? I would have run out of there like my pants were on fire.
So I listened to the podcast this week.
John
Firm.
And
he said the same thing. Yeah, it was John Firm. Said, there's not a tech shortage. We just pretty much don't pay them, right? I mean, that's pretty much what he said.
Yeah. And then my good
friend,
all
his guys are under 30.
And then my good friend Joshua Taylor from the Wrench Turners podcast, him and I were talking last week, and he says, there's not a technician shortage. He says, there's a sales shortage. And I go, Josh, that don't make no sense, man. He's like, no. If there was more work being sold, we would have more techs. So Josh predominantly is like a fixed ops guy for dealerships. He's teaching them how to maximize their efficiency in the service drives, how to make more per RO, how all that kind of stuff. His episode will be coming up soon. What he feels is that we have dropped the ball too often in the service drive for too many years of selling what the car needs, not just the warranty repair, but the recommended maintenance, all the stuff that's supposed to be done. We haven't done a good enough job because the dealers for too long, well, the cars are coming back for warranty. They're coming back. You know, we do the MPI on it and we give the customer, you know, one out of those five MPIs winds up with a brake flush. That's not going to fix the problem. So what Josh feels is that it's a situation of more has to be done in the service drive to sell more work, to get more work being done, to bring more people back into working in the dealers. And he's not wrong. I mean, there's a perfect example. My friend Taylor sitting there till 11 o'clock. Tonight, I called him and I said, so he's like, well, I got some work in the afternoon. He said it kind of made some money in the afternoon, but I don't think he took 8 hours home today.
I worked on 6 cars today. I took a vacation end of July. I've spent all of August digging myself out of a hole for the most part. Now, a lot of it's been jobs that have kicked my ass or just intermittents that I could spend the time on and then stuff like that. But we don't have a problem with lack of work.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, and nobody around here does either for the most part, or at least the shops I talk to. We have a lot of like one or two bay shops.
Right.
We have 3 to 4 techs if you count my stepdad. The biggest shop in our county probably has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They have maybe 6. But they also do car sales. They use used cars. So half of those guys are used cars guys and half of them are customer pay guys. So they have 20 to 30 cars on the lot at times that need fixed. So I'm sure that takes a lot. I don't think I could do that whole work on used cars daily. Seems rough because everything they buy at the auction has the oddest problems or cracked pistons or right. I mean, that's where everybody dumps their junk.
Well, that's who is the one guy that said, not every car that comes from the auction. How did he say that? Not every car that goes to the auction is junk. Something like that. Something about not every car that comes from the auction is garbage, but every car that was junk winds up at the auction. This, I think, is how the line, I can't remember who said it. And one guy I follow on TikTok, Check Engine Chuck. He's going to be an up guest as well. that dude, that's all he does now, it seems, is he's going to one car lot after another.
So you have to condition those car lot guys, from what I've learned. Because they'll try to beat you up, right? Because every $100 is coming off their profit, right? And we sold used cars when I was a kid. And I don't think the profit's there per car now. So now instead of having to sell 20 cars every 2 months, you got to sell 100 to make the same profit. It seems, and I'm sure those numbers are skewed, but you have to be honest with those guys. Hey, look, I'm going to give you a really good product and I'm not going to be wrong, but you're going to pay me. I'm not checking your check engine light that's been to the auction, been on for 6 months with six other problems for $50.
Yeah.
Most get it. And I've had some that just use me when they have to, right? Their guys have been through it. It's got four bad new parts plus the two original problems it started with.
Yeah. He was on one for a Mercedes today with some kind of key, it won't start. And, it's through this whole thing.
I seen that last night.
Yeah. And I'm looking, he's pulling some tool out that can read the key and read the security chip in the key and test the key and all this kind of stuff. But even it's acting weird. And I'm sitting there watching this little 3-minute video going, man, I hope you're charging well, because I wouldn't even entertain the notion of do I even know if I have the tooling that can go over there and help me get to what is wrong with this, And he's not showing up with the Otis or Opus or whatever that Mercedes. That tool. He's not showing up with that. He's showing up with, I think he had a launch, and he's got a lot of tooling. But I mean, he's got a launch there, and then he's got these other key tools and security tools and all this kind of stuff. And I'm just because they were going to call a locksmith in, because at first they thought there was, and the locksmith, it was going to be $300 for two keys. And Chuck went there and he's just like,
that sounds cheap for that kind of car.
It does. It does. And Chuck's like, but I didn't want to see them spend $300 if he wasn't 100% convinced it was the keys. And then, so he's back there. He said he's back there the second day with more tooling. He's now not charging him for the second call because he has to know, right? He has to. And I'm just shaking my head going,
pride doesn't pay your light bill. I have that problem. I can fix anything, right? Yeah, drop it off. I'll fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that doesn't pay the bills. You almost have to, I do a lot of studying on Facebook, and I still watch Danner, and but you make more money if you're Check Engine Chuck or Mobile Guy. You're going to make more money if you listen to Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
More than you will Danner after a certain point. Right?
I mean, you've
got to learn how to do that side of it. You can't. We have not done a great job at that at times.
Mm-hmm.
But that's been our problem with this industry from the. I mean, it's repeat, right? Wash and repeat with this industry.
Now, elaborate on that. Not just in the way that we're. Because you talked earlier about my young friend, we're going to drive right out of the industry. But, elaborate on that for me, what you mean by wash and repeat. I understand you're saying the cycle keeps going through.
Yeah, it's just a cycle. We talk about it, right? I mean, it's always been a problem. And we talk about it on Facebook. We talk about it in podcasts. And AST is coming up, right? Yep. The top, 2-5%. Of the techs and the teachers and I'll be there, right? Yeah. We all talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But what the hell is the bottom 50% talking about?
They're just talking about what they're going to fix. while we're the 2 days that we're going to be at ASTE.
But what are these guys, us top, let's say Facebook and some of the messengers that I'm in and everything, the guys that seek out the knowledge, right? Let's say it's 15%, or we'll just make it 20. What the hell is the other 80% talking about? What are they doing? Right? Will we ever reach those guys? Lucas says yes. I beg to differ at times. I know some of these 80%, right? They don't know. They're great guys, but they're horrible techs. They're horrible owners. I mean, right?
Hey, if you could do me a favor real quick and like, comment on, and share this episode, I'd really appreciate it. And please, most importantly, set the podcast to automatically download every Tuesday morning. As always, I'd like to thank our amazing guests for their perspectives and expertise, and I hope that you'll please join us again next week on this journey of change. Thank you to my partners in the ASOG Group and to the Change in the Industry podcast. Remember what I always say, in this industry, you get what you pay for. Here's hoping everyone finds their missing 10 millimeter, and we'll see you all again next time.